If Washington wants to get right with voters, it has to start listening to them.
Welcome to Beyond the Bubble. I'm Kristen Roberts, Washington editor for the 30 news organizations all around America that together make McClatchy. Every week, we call reporters and political operatives who live and work in battleground states and ask them to tell us how voters are reacting to Donald Trump and Republican Washington, and what issues Americans outside the Beltway are thinking about that D.C. still is not. On the hook this week, we have national correspondent Leslie Clark. She's our leadership reporter for McClatchy up on the Hill. And sitting next to me, back in the chair, Alex Rorty. What do you want to talk about, my friend?
Let's talk about the tax bill that passed the Senate just last week, and especially what the GOP accomplished and how Democrats are going to play it through 2018. And then how Democrats may or may not have squandered an opportunity in Alabama's special Senate election.
May not. All right. And then we're going to the lightning round where everybody on this panel gets to identify a politician making some moves relevant to the 2018 election. You ready?
Let's do it.
January 20th, the day the people became the rulers of this nation again.
And our ideals and fundamental values are being attacked. Do we retreat or do we fight? I say we fight.
He heard those voices that were out there that other people weren't hearing, and he just earned a mandate.
It is time for Democrats to grow a backbone and get out there and fight.
The American people would like to try something new. We would like to see the country go in a different direction to change the course for America.
He doesn't take this presidency seriously enough.
So to all Americans, hear these words. You will never be ignored again.
Alex, we've got the Alabama special Senate election a week away, and who are you going to interview about it?
I'm actually interviewing, believe it or not, a Democrat in Alabama, not just a Democrat in Alabama.
There are Democrats in Alabama.
Doug Jones certainly hopes so. It's a Democratic pollster, Zach McCrary, who does a lot of work nationally for Democratic campaigns, and he has had an up-close and personal look at the Senate race from beginning to end.
Mitch McConnell talked about the race, too. He talked about it on Face the Nation. And let's remember that Mitch McConnell and Roy Moore aren't really best friends.
Well, look, the people of Alabama are going to decide a week from Tuesday who they want to send to the Senate. It's really up to them. The president and I, of course, supported somebody different earlier in the process. But in the end, the voters of Alabama will make their choice.
Alex, 15-second view. What is the latest on that race?
Doug Jones's once promising lead from a Democrat's perspective has shrunk. Most polls now show Roy Moore ahead, and I think it's fair to say most people think Roy Moore is going to win.
Jordan Marie, let's call him.
Zach, how are you?
Very good, very good. It's good to speak with everyone.
Yeah, terrific. First questions first. Some of the polling that has come out about this race has painted something of a pessimistic picture for Democrats and for Doug Jones. I mean, he had looked like he was on track in the immediate wake of the allegations to win this race. But the recent polling suggests that maybe Roy Moore has bounced back. What is your perspective, and should Democrats be concerned?
Yeah, I mean, first of all, I think it's a difficult race to poll. We're talking about an election that will be December 12th, 13 days, under 2 weeks before Christmas Day. So a difficult race to poll. I do think certainly at the peak of the Moore scandal, when day after day evidence was coming out showing a pattern of predatory behavior by Moore, there was a period of a couple of weeks where certainly I do think Moore was bleeding vote every day. I think the race has stabilized since then.
You think Moore has gained ground since then?
Yeah, I think he's bounced back a little bit. A difficult race to poll. Most of the public polls that come out are IVR, robo polls, which legally cannot dial landlines. Many of those have really overrepresented seniors, which will be in the electorate. Now, it will be a relatively old electorate, but many of the public polls that have come out have overstated that. It makes me a little optimistic that, the one poll that I'm aware of in the public domain that was, a traditional survey that dialed landlines and cell phones, live dialed interviews, was a Washington Post poll where they partnered with a local academic institution, and that had Jones up 3 points. Not to be, sort of a cop-out, it does feel to me like very much of a toss-up, with one candidate up a point or two one direction or another. And I do feel like Jones has some advantages built in to the electorate, built into this campaign, that I am optimistic can put him over the top.
You know, you and I have talked about some of those advantages. You think that Doug Jones's campaign is simply better run. It is certainly better funded, and it is better at reaching out to some voters and getting them motivated on an already motivated Democratic base. That said, you know, the allegations against Roy Moore, we don't need to liberate them too much, but he's essentially accused of being a pedophile. And I think a lot of Democrats are going to wonder, if Doug Jones doesn't win this race, even in Alabama, how can we not beat someone who's accused of these kind of crimes?
Yeah, I mean, listen, I do think it's a minor miracle that we're sitting here almost 1 week out from the election, and Democrats are on the verge of winning a U.S. Senate race in the Deep South. My family moved to Alabama in 1997. There has not been a competitive U.S. Senate seat in Alabama since I've, you know, lived in the state for 20 years. So I think Doug Jones has a real chance to win. But whether or not Jones wins by a point or loses by a point, it doesn't obscure the fact that Republicans are in a position where they are close to forfeiting a U.S. Senate seat in the Deep South for 3 years.
Zach, President Trump came as close as he's going to get to endorsing in this race in the last few hours. What impact does that have, if anything, in Alabama?
Yeah, I mean, I go back and look at the Republican primary and runoff where Trump could not get his endorsed candidate through the Republican nomination process. Donald Trump endorsed, not just endorsed Luther Strange, came in and had campaign rallies in state. Luther Strange ended up losing by 10 points. So the Trump imprimatur, the Trump organization did not help Strange, and that was an election, the Republican runoff was an election geared at the 14% of the state who turned out in that Republican runoff, presumably the hardest of hardcore Trump partisans. That did not move the needle in a real way, it appeared, for Luther Strange. So I'm skeptical that it does much to benefit Roy Moore. And I think in some ways, you know, we see this nationally, and I think this is the case in Alabama as well. There is more organic energy among Democrats against Donald Trump than there is organic intensity in favor of Donald Trump among Republicans. And certainly I think the Jones campaign has the resources to pour gasoline on that fire.
Let me ask you a little bit about Doug Jones's candidacy. A lot has been made about the fact that he identifies as pro-choice and that on a lot of particularly social issues, I mean, he appears to be a down-the-line Democrat, and he hasn't really made an effort to try to distinguish himself as such. Do you think that this has been a mistake? And kind of a broader question for you, if a Democrat running in Alabama isn't pro-life, is that just a vestige of the Democratic Party right now that nobody, no candidate is going to run as a pro-life Democrat?
My firm did the work for the DGA in Louisiana, where John Bel Edwards, a proud pro-life Democrat, ran. And, you know, that was among the mix that helped him connect with the state. I do think that perhaps we are past the era where, as Democrats, all one needed to do was, you know, throw out some terms, pro-life, pro-gun, and check some boxes. And that was all one needed to do. I think the authenticity and, you know, a genuine candidate is what's important to connect with the cultural roots of a state. And I think Doug Jones, my understanding is he sort of supports a status quo of abortion laws. But, you know, Doug Jones has talked about his blue-collar roots in the state. He's the son of a steel mill worker. Doug Jones worked a summer in a Birmingham steel mill. He's a tough-on-crime U.S. attorney. And he's talked a lot about, in his campaign, working across party lines. And especially on choice, I do think that, you know, if you're a single-issue abortion voter, you're a single-issue pro-life voter, I would posit that you're not really up for grabs in this election. And so, you know, I do think that, you know, maybe it's a different playbook than Democrats have used in these types of races in previous cycles. You know, but the Jones campaign, from my perspective, has placed a high priority on connecting with the cultural values in the state and making sure that Doug Jones is the right kind of Democrat, an Alabama-style Democrat, even if the components of that look a little different than what we might be used to seeing in some other states.
Zach, let me ask you, if you were running the Jones campaign, what is the closing message here? Do you go in on, you know, highlighting the accusations against Roy Moore, or is it something different?
One of the good things about the Jones campaign, and you talked about the resources they have, they actually have the resources to have, I think, multiple closing messages. You know, my sense is, even before these allegations, that a majority of Alabamians were looking for a reason to vote against Roy Moore. So I do think, you know, that is something that is necessary to reinforce with voters, that Alabamians have been embarrassed by Roy Moore on the national stage for, you know, the better part of 20 years now. And I do think there's a real sentiment in the state, even among voters who are Republican, even among voters who haven't voted Democratic in a high-profile election in a decade, a real sentiment that they're tired of Roy Moore, but also the Jones positive message. I mean, you know, Doug Jones, again, his values are right in touch with the state and has run a campaign, as he calls it, talking about kitchen table issues of better jobs and better schools and affordable health care. And again, the Jones campaign does have the resources, as far as I am aware, to carry both of those messages. And I think those are both, you know, very important for Jones to connect in the closing stretch.
Terrific. Hey, Zach, thank you so much for coming on. We really appreciate it.
Yeah, happy to talk.
Thanks, Zach.
Thanks, everyone.
Alex, that was a good interview.
You know, I think Zach is still optimistic about Doug Jones. I think it's fair to say a lot of Democrats do not share that anymore.
I mean, was he really optimistic or was he saying the things he's paid to say?
Difficult to tell.
It's difficult to tell in these things. The one thing that I mentioned in there was Donald Trump's near endorsement of Roy Moore. And what Donald Trump was doing there was telling the people of Alabama that they need to vote for this candidate so that he has the votes he needs to get the tax bill passed, which is a fantastic segue, thank you, Mr. President, to Leslie Clark, who is our leadership reporter here at McClatchy. She covers Congress, and she's been covering this tax bill, and she's been working really hard. Thank you for being with us.
Thanks for having me.
So this bill has passed the House. A different bill has passed the Senate. It is now going to something called a conference committee. But there are a lot of hurdles for these Republicans to overcome to create a bill that can pass. Give me a hurdle and tell me the Republican who might mess it up for the rest of the party.
All right. Well, we could start with Senator Susan Collins from Maine.
Always a good one.
She had been opposed to the repeal of the Affordable Care Act back over the summer and one of Mitch McConnell's biggest obstacles to getting that done, which he did not. She has voted in favor of the tax bill, but only with the provision that some fixers for the Affordable Care Act would be considered separately.
Obviously, I want to see what comes out. I believe that the amendments that I added on medical expense deductions, on property tax deductions, on helping retirement security for public employees improve the bill.
If that doesn't happen, you know, she could be against the tax bill.
So she's on the record saying she might not vote for this thing at a conference.
And it's such a narrow margin that one senator could throw the whole thing out of whack.
Talk to me about somebody like Carlos Curbelo. What role is he going to play?
Yeah, Carlos Curbelo is a Miami Republican who also chairs a group called the Climate Change Caucus in the House, sort of getting moderate Republicans interested in climate change. He and 11 fellow House Republicans have sent a letter saying that they are opposed to any efforts to drill in the Arctic Wildlife Refuge. Now, you might say, what does that have to do with a tax bill?
One might say that.
Well, that was one of the little things that the Senate Republicans put in an effort to get as many members as possible to support the tax bill.
And in particular, Murkowski, right?
Yeah. In particular, the Alaska Senator Lisa Murkowski, they put in a provision to allow oil and gas exploration so that she would be more amenable to the tax bill. But the House Republicans don't like that provision. It's unclear whether or not they'd vote against it, but it doesn't make their life any easier.
All right. So we've got a Republican way up in Northeast. We've got a Republican way down in Southeast. What about on the West Coast?
Yeah. And we've got a host of California Republicans who are looking at this bill and sort of wondering where they're going to go on it. They've voted for it in the past, not all of them, but there's a lot of questions for them about what it does to state and local tax exemptions.
That's a big deal in California. Why?
California is one of about a half a dozen states that are considered high property tax states. And so people pay a lot of property taxes and are accustomed to getting a nice benefit in April when their tax bill comes
along. The politics of that one are really tricky.
Well, and you have to remember that people might miss this, but California is actually an enormous battleground for 2018. I mean, there are more Democratic targets in that state than anywhere else, so much so that House Democrats have actually opened an office in California specifically just so they could be on top of developments out there.
Just on Twitter, you could see how Democrats were testing the idea that the Republican voter was supposed to be a populist voter. How were they going to react to a GOP tax bill that they were arguing benefits corporations and the rich over any of those working class voters who flocked to Trump? Is that going to stick?
This actually, I was talking with one Democratic strategist just this morning who I think sees it as part of what is going to be a broader campaign arguing in tandem with the healthcare vote, which we talked about a lot in this podcast. Republicans, when they legislate, they're there for the rich. They're not for you. They're not for the middle class. They're not for the working class. They're not even there for the Trump voter. They're there for the most wealthy Americans and big multinational corporations. That's who they're fighting for. And it is something that does work in tandem with healthcare, where the argument there was that they were going to take away people's care. They were going to take away some protections, particularly for middle class families. Even if that legislation didn't pass, that it really left a mark on the electorate. This legislation did pass. Now, it isn't as unpopular as healthcare. I don't think it stirred the same passion. And I think we saw that. Maybe it's one of the reasons that the vote did pass. But working together, that Democrats essentially think that they have their message, particularly I think the Democrats who would rather not necessarily focus entirely on Donald Trump and certainly would not rather focus on the Russia investigation. These are the pocketbook issues, I think, that helped them return to power in 2018. And at the same time, you think that they might have a case, particularly with tax reform, just because if you look at the polls, they're all very clear. The legislation is unpopular. Majorities think it's going to disproportionately help the rich. You know, Leslie, my question for you is whether or not did any of these sort of broader politics sink in to Republican lawmakers? Do they know that Democrats are already planning ad campaigns around this message?
Yeah, Republicans are very aware of that. When they look at the same polls, however, they see that the tax plan is popular among Republicans, among their base, and they argue that they've got to do something. I mean, this has been such a disaster of a year for them legislatively. They tried to get health care repealed, which they had promised their voters they would do for since the time it was enacted in 2010. So I think when it comes down to it, we've got to do something. We've got to go home with something. They didn't want to be, you know, heading out to 2018 and not campaigning with anything that they were able to tout without anything to say that they had been able to deliver. So I think as much as they worry about the Democratic appeals that it might benefit the rich,
they have to worry about their donors.
Those people.
Yeah. And when you look at the players in terms of the advertising and in terms of the push for the tax reform, the Koch brothers affiliated groups alone spent more than $10 million on advertising and getting out the message efforts on it. So, yeah, they definitely have to worry about the donor class.
And this comes against the backdrop of the National Republican Senatorial Campaign Committee. Its fundraising has been abysmal. It's really not something that's gotten a lot of attention, the same amount of attention, say, like the DNC's own fundraising struggles. They've actually spent more money than they've raised for several consecutive months, which is really unusual. And you could even see it. I mean, Cory Gardner, the chairman of the NRSC, out there saying that if we don't pass this, you know, the checks have already dried up and they're not going to come, and then we're not going to have money for our campaigns. And honestly, there's nothing that scares candidates more than the idea that they won't have money next year.
Right. And you had Chris Collins from New York with a ready-made for Democrats campaign ad suggesting that they wouldn't be able to answer the calls from their donors if they didn't get taxes done.
Yeah, Republicans are really open about this, which is kind of an odd strategy. But I think, you know, it was so dire that they needed to pass this legislation for any number of reasons that they almost had to be very open and transparent about what was really motivating. Lindsey Graham was saying the same thing. You know, they really had no choice. They just had to say, look, guys, if we don't pass this, there isn't going to be any money for our campaigns next year. It's not necessarily a great message, Kristen. I don't know.
Call you know, what? I just think that the news cycle is such that no one a year from now is going to remember that he ever said that. You know, I mean, these are not things that are going to work their way into campaign ads or that voters are going to be reminded about in October of 2018.
Unless it's Chris Collins' race.
Maybe then.
And I think it's also something that they're activists and that voters really did want them to get something done. I mean, when I talked to voters in North Carolina earlier this year, they were just so angry at the fact the Republican Party could not get much done, could not get the Affordable Care Act. The thing I heard over and over again is, you know, you told us you'd do it after you got the House, then we gave you the Senate, now we've given you the White House, and you haven't been able to deliver. So I do think there is something to them listening to that discontent in their heads.
Leslie, is there any chance that this does not become the law of the land?
I find that really hard to comprehend. I mean, anything's possible, though. This, as the past couple of years has shown us in Washington, anything can happen. But I seriously doubt there'd be anything that will get in their way of getting it done. I'd give it an 85% chance.
Oh, I'd give it 95%. I think it's done.
I'm going to play Price is Right and say 96%.
96%
chance that they pass it.
$1. All right, guys, it's time for the lightning round. You know the drill. Each one of you identifies a Republican or a Democrat making moves relevant to 2018. And because you are new, you go first, Leslie Clark.
Excellent. I am going to go with Ohio Democratic Senator Sherrod Brown.
That's a new name.
He is one of 10 Senate Democrats who's up for re-election in 2018 in states that Donald Trump won in 2016. He was the star of a gavel-banging dispute with Orrin Hatch, the Republican chairman of the Senate Finance Committee, in saying that the tax bill was nothing more than a gift to plutocrats.
Now, all I can say is I like you personally very much, but I'm telling you, this bull crap that you guys throw out here really gets old after a while. To do it right at the end of this was just not right.
Which really raised Hatch's hackles and sent the clip viral. And I think Brown is somebody who is one of the senators that the White House had hoped to bring some Democratic senators on board so that they could get a bipartisan tax bill. I talked to Brown for months, and he told me that he had been to the White House, that he had had all kinds of conversations, and that Trump liked his ideas. He would go back to the Senate, and they would just not listen to any of his ideas.
All right, Sherrod Brown. What do you got, Alex?
Mine is actually includes Sherrod Brown. It's all 10 Democratic senators up for re-election next year in states that Donald Trump won in last year's election. None of them face a serious primary challenger. This is a big surprise in an age of increased liberal activism, and it is a big surprise in part because none of them voted for health care. And as Leslie has mentioned, none of them are on track to vote for tax legislation. This is an enormous development for Senate Democrats as they consider their very long shot hopes of winning the Senate majority in 2018.
I'm going with Sheila Jackson Lee. She is a Democrat from Texas who is joined with a group of Republicans and Democrats to essentially threaten a government shutdown over resources to help hurricane victims. And I'm looking at your face and something tells me you have another name on your mind.
Well, I had an honorable mention.
Do it.
This is like extra credit.
Yeah, except that Alex kind of like sucked the air out of my way.
Because
he went with all 10. Yeah. I was
going
to go with an honorable mention for John Tester for an amusing video that he sent out on Friday night as the Senate was trying to get the tax bill done. And he's just, you know, a plain-spoken Montanan who was pissed about the tax bill and slammed it on his desk saying this is Washington, D.C. at its worst.
All right. I like that one. Thank you very much for being with us.
Thanks for having me.
And thank you, Alex, for coming back to work today.
I was really happy to do so and continue to draw a paycheck. It's really great. Capitalism's the best.
Thank you to our producers, Devin Coburn and Jordan Marie Smith. And thank you to our listeners. We want to hear from you. So please send your questions and your comments to btb@mcclatchy.com. Tell us what you're seeing in your battleground states. And we might even ask you to call into the show. Check us out on Apple Podcasts, TuneIn, Stitcher, or whatever podcast app you use. Leave us a review and talk to you next week.
If Washington wants to get right with voters, it has to start listening to them.
Now do it differently. Like, rap it. Have you watched this show with Method Man? Do you even know who Method Man is?
I know who Method Man is. He was in The Wire.
Maybe we can get Method Man to come on the show just to do that.
I once tried to karaoke a Method Man song. It did not go well.
I think I would like to
did
see that.
Not go well.
I would like to see
can
you do some Wu-Tang.
Can we do that right now?
Nope.